Well, good morning, all. Quite a crowd. Look at that. Packed to the rafters. I'm not an agriculturist. I'll start off with a disclaimer. As mentioned, I'm a forester. Well, the crop's a little larger, 70 years before we harvest. Things are a little bit different, but also pretty much similar. So that maybe added some credibility. Part two, though, I may have some problems. In that now, I've gone to the dark side. I'm computers, I'm maps, I've been in GIS technology since 1967. So the rest of those were just fun things on the side. The graphic up there, for those who can't read it in the back, way down in the fine print of the graphic, it says, is the technical cart in front of the scientific horse. So that's gonna be kind of my theme. I'd like to focus in for this audience a bit on precision ag science as opposed to precision ag applications. So what is precision agriculture? Raj gave us a fabulous definition. He had five parts to it. I only have three. And it's about doing the right thing in the right place. And then I think he kept going and going and going at the right time, right amount, and stuff like that. So we've kind of expanded that definition since the early 90s. It also identifies and responds to field variability. That's where the science comes in. How do you identify, and then how do you deal with relationships so that you can make accurate actions, management actions, the response? And then another thing that's very important, and maybe those last few slide sets of Raj kind of mentioned it, is it doesn't replace indigenous knowledge. It's a mechanism to extend it. But this might be a better way to define it, is that it's a different technology and it's radically changing agriculture. It's the only way to go, Frank. Why, my life's changed ever since I discovered stackable livestock. So that might be coming next. In the meantime, a lot of producers kind of see this technology as equivalent to stackable livestock. Let me give you a little bit of history, promise that. I mentioned that I built my first computer map in 67, but in the 70s, we knew what this technology was. It was automated cartography. The whole idea is, could we replace flesh wrapped around a rapidograph pin for drawing maps with the cold steel of a plotter? It was automated cartography. It was a mapping science. Well, in the next decade, when we moved maps from analog, lines, points, globs, colors, patterns, shapes, when we moved that concept of an analog map into the digital world, it had to become an organized set of numbers. When that happened, so we could run the plotter, when that happened, we realized we could link our digital maps to our databases. A database, instead of describing a individual bank account, current amount, interest to date, is we would carry information about spatial objects. Your property. How much is your property worth? What buildings are on your property? So we extended mapping into spatial database management systems. Both of those have little to no application to precision agriculture. Wasn't until the 90s that we started moving into map analysis, the idea that we could represent relationships and patterns analytically within a computer. That's when it started attracting precision ag. You don't have a history of mapping, but you certainly have a history of trying to figure out what affects crop growth, what affects good stewardship. And then finally, well, that was a decade of the 90s, and what we're tinkering around with now is what you see all over the internet, and that's a whole lot of things like Google Earth. It's back to the expression. So I'll talk a little bit more about that, but the focus here will be that we're going to take that, it's not called GIS anymore. It's called geotechnology. The U.S. Department of Labor has said geotechnology is one of three mega technologies for the 21st century. They identified only three. That's radically going to change society. The other two, biotechnology and nanotechnology. So the field you're tinkering in is thought to be a mega technology. Well, what this little graphic in the illegible red up there is trying to tell you is that we've transitioned from the idea of a mapping and an inventory science into one where it becomes analysis, and we move from where is what inventory to what and so why, and that's why it's applicable to you, and that's why it's a scientific question, not just a technology. Well, let's play a little bit further, setting the stage. In order to have precision ag have an impact on crop production, there has to be some variables that affect crop production that have a spatial character. So out of those, we have water, weather, topology, a bunch of that list. What the science does is identify those variables affecting crop production that one is significant. If it's an insignificant thing, ladybug production. Well, some crops could be important, but maybe that is significant. If so, that's step one. It ought to be a significant variable. Step two, it has to be measurable, and measurable in a sense that we can measure the spatial distribution. We can measure the variability of that variable across a field. That needs to be there. That a variability can be explained. That means we can investigate it. We can understand it. We can link it to other things. And then finally, there has to be a spatial response. Kind of Simon's talk that's coming up. There needs to be something, certainly in the U.S., on a robotic side, where we can express our variable management action across the field. So we actually need all four of those points before we really have a precision ag question to address. Historically, we addressed it in a whole field context. You know, since the turn of the century, we've had agricultural research. But the research looked for central tendency. It tried to distill all of the information about a field down to one characteristic that we would use for management action. Because our distillation was a whole field at a time, our action said, do this across the whole field uniformly. Well, a little bit of a spatial move off of that says that if we can divide our field up into management zones, it's kind of like having three little fields in one field, but the three little fields represent different conditions, so I'll do a different management action for those three. So that kind of brought up the idea of management zones. Note that they're discrete. They have sharp edges. And also note that the assumption is that the variable is uniformly distributed in geographic space throughout each one of the regions. So it is like taking whole field and just breaking it up into puzzle parts. I stuck up there a term that goes along with this. You run into a law, it's called smart sampling. If we can go out and take a look at our field, look at it, and say, you know, that's different over there than over there, or look down on an aerial image and say that's different than over there, then what we'll do is we'll send out and we'll do some random sampling within that field, within each one of those zones, aggregate the information to a typical central tendency, and then we'll come up with a response. I put a question mark by that idea, smart sampling, because a little later on I might suggest that it's actually fairly dumb. Here's another way to look at a field. A field is a continuous geographic surface, not composed of puzzle parts, but we're going to actually look at the spatial distribution and deal with the spatial distributions with the spatial statistics. Instead of a numerical distribution that we all use in statistics, we're also going to extend it to include the spatial distribution of that same data. Well, that's what we're going to play around with. And I'm going to suggest to the research community that is an unparalleled opportunity to affect agricultural research, to change our paradigm on what our data is. Well, here's an example. I'm going to play around, show you a little bit. This might be more difficult. I'm going to have to work off the computer.
This works?
Yes. So I'm going to switch over to this guy, and I'm going to play a bit with the computer. I'm going to suggest that the, like a yield map, we've all seen these yield maps showing up. I'm going to suggest that throughout this yield map, you see discrete partitioning into seven layers. What the computer sees is something radically different. In order to see this map, think of it in three dimensions. But before we do that, let me add something that allows us to look in three dimensions at it. Is we're going to divide the field into a continuous analytical frame. It's as if you went out there with a bunch of graduate students and you said, put a plot there, and 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 in fact, put a plot everywhere. That's a different kind of statistics. Don't put nine randomly identified plots in the field, but actually measure the spatial distribution continuously. Well, that's what these little squares do. Now, let me zoom in on this thing into a little portion of it. Now let me turn it into 3D. Whoops, went down. And let me turn it into a little bit different view that looks at the raw data. So really what we have, when you think about it, is each one of these response plots has a number associated with it, a value, digital map, that tells us the level of yield, tells us the level of phosphate, tells us the level of potassium and nitrogen on the field. That's the trick. And when we think about these in geotechnology, we call them map surfaces. Big difference is it's your data, field data, expressed continuously in geographic space. Now, if I come up here and hit this button, keep in mind that I have tens, hundreds of these layers. Same space, possibly over time, every year for 15 years. That's a pretty data-rich environment compared to our historical science. Now I have to switch back. This is going to be harder. Well, maybe not. No. Okay, so what did I propose there? I propose that we have mapped variables that represent the spatial distribution as well as the numeric distribution of variables that we think affect crop production. It's referred to as a map stack in geotechnology. This map stack is geo-registered, so every location across the field, there's 1,200 of them on this pivot cornfield, has a value stored as a matrix of numbers, kind of like a matrix algebra, if you will. And we're going to use that information to make our decisions. Actually, this is just a start slide, and it's just supposed to set the stage. We're not going to go through all of this stuff, but something for you to hang your hat on. I give a lot of workshops, actually in a lot of different disciplines, I use this same slide. See, what you're doing in Precision Ag, I'll say, procedurally, is identical to what we do in geobusiness marketing, retail marketing. Now, instead of crop production, yield, as the gold, we're kind of looking for sales yield, maybe for plasma TVs. And the maps we're going to analyze, you wouldn't think they'd have anything to do with soil nutrients. They don't. They have a lot to do with demographics. They have a lot to do with every time you swipe your credit card, I know what you bought, I know where you live, I know how much money you make, I know all sorts of information about you. We have those as layers of a LA basin. We want to relate a dependent variable, plasma TV sales. Well, that's the same as corn yield. Two deep independent variables. Now, that could be soil nutrients in one case. This other case is demographics. The procedure, the science, like statistics, is generalized. It doesn't own by one application field. Spatial data mining, that's the understay of your scientific side of this, is generalized. We do the same thing in natural resources. Certainly the same thing in epidemiology. Oh my God, lots of dengue fever over here, not much over there. Let's analyze it so that we can understand it spatially and then apply back management action spatially. So keep that in mind. Generalized workshop organization. Well, there's one thing that we start off talking about, surface modeling. If we're going to do this spatial statistics, we've got to do surface modeling. Now, click. There we go. Surface modeling suggests that we're going to go out and collect point data, and we're going to turn it into a representation of the spatial distribution. See, when we normally go out and collect point data, we usually end up with an Excel spreadsheet. You know, plot number one, this is how much we measured. And this is how much we measured 30 days later. Let's say the parts per million phosphorus. And then what we do is we run down the column, add it up, divide by 16, because that's N, and we say, well, gee, on the average, there's 23 parts per million phosphorus in this field. Huh. Well, a good scientist will push the next button that says standard deviation. And in statistics, there's only one rule. I mean, that's what's so neat about statistics. It's, well, on the other hand, you could have pulled a black ball out of the urn. You know, it's all this, well, on the other hand, almost as bad as economics. But there's one rule in statistics. And it says if this number, called the standard deviation, representing the variability in the data, is relatively big compared to this number, called the central tendency, the average, the mean, you can't use the mean to make a decision. Hell, it's bigger. It's screaming at you. There's too much unexplained variability in this data for you to use that whole field average across the field. You're going to really screw it up. Huh. Well, let's take that information. I mean, your eyeball tells you. In some places, as high as 68. In some places, as low as 0. Why do I think there's 23 everywhere? Because that's traditional science. Let's do our first order approximation. Guilt by proximity. If I'm a location in the field that wasn't sampled, give me the value of the closest sample. That's a first order spatial approximation. All of a sudden now I have a spatial distribution over the whole field. I took 16 points, turned it in this case, 625. Guilt by association, blockiness. But it's kind of showing what my eye showed me in that data. You know, over in here it looks like we have a lot, and down in here it looks like we have little to none. Now let's take a window, and in this we call it a window, because that's a matrix of numbers. So I'm going to take this window that reaches out and grabs localized, a few numbers around it, and average it. So when it's reaching around here in a little area, it grabs all the same values, doesn't change things much. But when half that window is low and half that window is high, when I take the average, it's going to have the effect of chipping away at that stair step and the rubble filling in the bottom. I'm going to smooth it once, twice, three, four times. I think that was the spatial, generalized spatial distribution that my eye was seeing. And just for fun, computer abuse. There's a lot of numbers, you wouldn't want to do this, but let's make it 9 times I've smoothed it. 19, 29, 39, 49, 69, 99 times I've smoothed that little sucker. Kind of like erosion of the Rockies. What's happened? It goes to a plane. What is that plane mathematically? It's the average. So the next time you take an average and you apply it back to geographic space, look at all the information you threw away about the spatial variability. That's what I'm going to challenge our science. Is we can, for most of our data, thank God we're in a natural setting. Spatial autocorrelation is rampant in natural settings. Spatial autocorrelation doesn't appear when it's humans that decide to put some oddball thing out here and another oddball thing over there. Nature tends, by nature itself, to work within niches. So if that occurs, we can interpolate our data. Here's a technique, inverse distance weighted technique, does the same thing for a cornfield now. Here's all my holes in the ground. And then here's they look like in as individual discrete point samples. And then I'll ask the computer to kind of like lay a blanket over it, if you will, and look at the continuous distribution of phosphorus in the field. Let's compare that approach to the average. See, the average is a pancake that says everywhere is exactly the same. It's uniform distribution throughout the whole area. The average is assumed everywhere the same. Let's just subtract those two maps, because those are maps now. They're sitting in the computer, matrix of numbers. This one just has the same number everywhere. Let's just subtract them, a mapematics. And when I do, I say, how far away is the localized variance estimate from the generalized central tendency estimate? And I get this surface over here. And it actually goes from minus 16.6 parts per million up to 84.4 parts per million. That's a huge difference. And you see that huge spike. It says this guy is way under guessing where you see green, and it's over guessing where you see red. The mean is hardly anywhere. In fact, the mean is, if you can see it, this bright yellow line, kind of, as if you sliced across that. It's hardly anywhere. Assumption, whole field, assumption, management zone, it's everywhere. Well, now let's go in and get with the soil scientists in the room. Oh my God, what we do is nitpick, write articles, ruin friendships, develop bonds and religious, depending on what interpolation technique you use. So this top one here is inverse distance weighted, geometry based. Ah, what a funny one. And Krieg, a South African geo-explorationist, came out with Krieging that, oh, it has semivariance, it has statistical, it has everything you can write papers about. So we all say, oh, geez, this is so much better, we ought to use it all the time. Let me just do the same thing. Let's compare IDW to Krieg and look at the different surface. The different surface over here is about 20 parts per million between. Places I've consulted with, 10 parts per million in phosphorus is about a fertilizer program step. So they're kind of within one step of each other everywhere in geographic space. One didn't predict a great big glob over here, and the other one predict a little glob on the other side. They're pretty much the same. So I'd contend, watch this in your science, that if you're writing to other scientists, that's probably a good idea. If you're writing to the user, I don't give a darn which type you use, because they're both so damn much better than using a whole field average or management zone average. Halfway through, or a third of the way through. Let's play around with this next thing called spatial data mining. Keep in mind, this isn't just precision ag. So now I've got this phosphorus, and I've got this phosphorus, potassium, nitrogen, pH, maybe nematode concentration. Got all these variables spatially expressed over my field. So how do they relate to one another? Well, if this is a mapping science, we'd pin this thing on the wall, and like Columbo, we'd look at it, or Foresters, that's where it came from. You finish a fifth of old Forester, the three maps all come together, and you hit it with a great big fat marker and say, I'll do this here. What? Contend that you as a human can't do this. You can't look at the spatial specificity in a bunch of variables. You know, look, high, medium. High, low, medium. I quit as a human. I can't see any relationships. So we'll ask the computer to see relationships in map data, and it uses the underlying principle of multivariate statistics, that there's a data space. And the data space says, if these are all numbers and I spear one of my little squares, I can go over into data space, which are the axes of the variables, low to high. It'll plot as a variable, as a dot, somewhere in that data space, abstract. And my comparison point is clear over here to a point that maybe I clicked on first. See how radically different they are in data space? The computer can see that. It can see it for every one of the 1,300 data points. There's no way in the world you're going to see that. There's no way that you're going to see that when you're looking out over the field, dividing it into management zones. We're on the air photo. There's a whole lot more information going on. So if we have this ability of the computer to measure the distance, it actually uses the Pythagorean theorem, n-dimensional Pythagorean theorem, I can now break that cloud of response into zones. Now they're data zones based upon the data, not a surrogate. Use statistics to build my management zones. Or, in the full precision ag process, send out your harvester, create a yield map every few feet in the field, send out your minions, poke holes in the field, build what we believe are the driving variables, called independent variables, dependent variables. Build relationships. Don't just, like I suggested, just look at this to break up the field. Actually use yield in there and use things like regression, techniques like that. Maybe cart technology. Mine it so it now clusters the field. Take either continuous for every one of these squares, what exactly wants to be in each one of those squares, or these management zones. And as the fertilizing rig, the spray rig, runs over that part, GPS controlled, it's the robotic side, got my 40-foot boom, 15 spray heads, let's run each of those as it says we're crossing the square, right amount, right place, hopefully right time. That process is called spatial data mining. That process, as I mentioned, is the same in geobusiness, it's the same in forestry, it's the same in epidemiology. It's a relatively new statistics. So what we normally did is we would take a bunch of things we sampled in space, force them to be fit by a standard normal curve, take the average and apply the average to the different fields in the area. What this suggests is we'll take the same data, we'll look at its spatial distribution. Here's its average. There's some places in here that are over 50 in this example. My God, that exceeds legal limits. Huh, I don't see any problem down here. If I look at the standard deviation, 50's outside the standard deviation. But you know, I really got a problem up here. Now, if I take two fields, carry their spatial distributions together, I can find there's a problem in this field up here, there's a problem in that field up there, and I'll bet you there's a problem in the field right there. We've got a problem. You'll never find that traditionally. So where are we in precision ag? Kind of brings us to this part. We have yield mapping. I'd say it's a done deal for many crops. Soil nutrient mapping. I'd say that's coming along pretty well. We're arguing about procedures. Maybe too much, I mentioned. Management zone mapping. I think we're doing pretty well. I just prefer that we did it using the data to break it up. Full precision farming process. I think we have a long ways to go. A fair piece to go. Because that says that we're going to optimize, I'd like to think mathematically, if condition, then action. To make that happen, we have to be able to describe what is where. Well, yield maps, soil nutrient maps, these things are coming online. Then we have prediction. We've got to build that relationship, dependent to independent variables. Then we have to come up with the prescription techniques to make that happen. And then we're back to action. Precisely here. I'd say we got that one nailed. Pretty much. It's here that we're struggling. Now, given that, there's a bunch of opportunities at the end, if I remember right, that you can ask questions. Not now. That's right. Okay. I'm out of here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Joe.